You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 24th of January, 2023, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I'd like to have a look at some accusations of racism today to start with, and if we have time, we'll also have a look at the way that, in actual fact, it's white people that are being discriminated against, not non-whites. And this first article I have actually comes from the BBC, and the BBC are supposed to be completely unbiased. They're supposed to be center ground on everything. And I have a browser that I use. It's called Freespoke, and it actually tells you whether the news articles that you're looking at, whether they are left-wing, right-wing, or center. And it tells me that this BBC article is left-wing. Well, that's clearly not unbiased and objective then, is it? I mean, if even a browser is telling me that this is left-wing, then the BBC is not living up to its promise to be unbiased. And the article is actually telling us that racism is standing in the way of people being able to find a place to rent. And I guess this is separate to the problems that people are now having trying to find places to rent, because houses that are available for rent are being taken up with so-called refugees, where the government are trying to move them on from the hotels that they've been putting them in. And once they finish in a hotel, they either put them up in private rented accommodation or they put them up in council houses. And obviously, that means there are going to be less private houses available on the market for people to rent. So there's going to be problems with white people finding places to live, places to rent. That is already now showing itself. But what we have here is black and minority ethnic people complaining that it is racism that is actually stopping them from finding a place to live. And it seems to me that what is actually stopping them from finding a place to live is completely other reasons. And if these are the only reasons the BBC could find, the only examples of racism that they could find, then clearly there really isn't that much racism going on in the rental sector. And they start saying Zara was due to move in 3 days' time when she received a message from her new landlord. "Your picture was fake," he said in an email. He said her photo showed blonde hair and white skin. But actually, you are Indian, with black hair and brown skin," he wrote. So she sent in a fake picture. She has committed fraud. That's the reason why he didn't want her moving in, not because she's an Indian, but because she committed fraud. And it's quite obvious there. And he's not talking about race. He's talking about ethnicity. And she had clearly sent in a fake picture of herself. That's the reason why he didn't want her moving in. Continuing here, Zara, not her real name, told him that she hadn't used a fake photo, but he said she couldn't move in and accused her of trying to appear white. Again, where is her proof that it was a fake photo? All she did was say it's not a fake photo, but if the photo she sent shows somebody who is clearly of European ethnicity and she is actually of Indian ethnicity, then she's clearly engaging in fraud here, isn't she? She said the email, which she shared with BBC Newsbeat, just came as a complete surprise to me. No one has ever referenced my skin colour before in that way, says Zara. Well, he was pointing out that it's obviously a fake picture, and that's the way that you can tell that it's a fake picture, is because one picture is of somebody who has fair skin and fair hair, and the actual person that's claiming that it's a picture of them has black hair and brown skin. I mean, that's not racism. That's pointing out that she's obviously sent in a fake photograph. She says, in the email, he explicitly started talking about how dark my skin was. I never would have thought to think about my skin colour being a barrier. Well, it's not her skin colour that's a barrier. It's the fact that she sent in a fake picture. She says, unfortunately, that's just how it is, and I didn't think we lived in a country like that. And Zara reported the incident to flat sharing site Spare Room, where she found the London house listed. And this is right at the top of the BBC's article about how racism is preventing people from finding houses to rent. So that must be their most egregious example of racism that they could find. And it's basically sending in a fake picture. I mean, the landlord, when they rent out a place to somebody, a room to somebody, they're wanting that person to be honest, aren't they? Because they're trusting their property to them. They're expecting them to pay the bills, not lie about who they are. And if they show right at the beginning that they're lying and they're committing fraud, then the landlord is obviously within their rights to withhold that place and say, no, I'm not renting it to you because you committed fraud against me. And that's what she's actually done here. So she complains to the letting company, or the company that was finding the room, Spare Room. And she says she was told they would restrict the landlord's account, but Zara feels this wasn't good enough. I don't think they actually did anything, she says. When I went back and checked his profile, it was still there, and he was still advertising. So obviously, the company Spare Room have investigated this. They checked it out, so it must be that what the landlord is saying is true. She must have sent in a fake picture. She hasn't sent any proof to the BBC that it was a fake picture. She just says that it is, and instead of concentrating on the fraud that she's carried out, she just wants to concentrate on the way that he detected that it was a fraud. I mean, he detected it was a fraud because it was a person of completely different ethnicity standing there trying to rent the place than the picture that he had been sent of the person who it was. Spare Room says racial discrimination is against its terms and conditions, and it takes allegations very seriously. So quite clearly they have investigated this. They say, we look into every single report of discrimination we receive and we investigate thoroughly. If we find that racial discrimination has occurred, we will remove the user permanently, and we also encourage all complaints to be reported to the police. That was the statement from Spare Room. So clearly they investigated this, and clearly they found that racial discrimination was not occurring here. She was not refused the room because the person hated the colour of the skin. She was refused the room because she had committed fraud against the landlord. And the BBC should know that, but they don't. They just want to pretend that this is all about racism. Zara says the experience won't be easy to forget. Now I'll probably think about it any time I apply for some other place. Well, hopefully she will think about it and not send in a fake photograph next time. I mean, that's the moral of this story, isn't it? Don't try and commit fraud against potential landlords. Other young people say racial discrimination while flat hunting is not unusual. Research by the housing charity Shelter suggests that at least 1 in 10 renters has faced racism. In a 2021 survey answered by over 500 black and Asian adults, 14% of black respondents and 10% of Asian respondents said they had experienced discrimination while house hunting. Okay, well, do we hear of lots of landlords that are discriminating against people, that are being taken to court for hate crimes? I mean, what they're making is quite a serious allegation here, that these landlords are hating, they just hate the colour of the skin, and therefore they're discriminating against these potential renters of their property. That is not going on here, is it? What's going on here is that these black respondents and Asian respondents, they have tried to get a house and they've been turned down for whatever reason. And the landlord will have given them a reason, I should imagine, even if he didn't give them a reason. How do they know that it's racism? I mean, the problem is, when you have a multicultural society and you are going to be interacting with somebody from a different ethnicity to you, there's always going to be that suspicion that there was discrimination involved in some way. As we saw with this story here, she was turned away because she committed fraud against the landlord, but she feels that it was discrimination. She feels that it was racism against her, even when we can clearly see that after an investigation, it was found that there was no racial discrimination occurring there. But she still feels that there was. So what that tells us is that it doesn't matter how much we do to try and get rid of racism in society, in a multicultural society, people are always going to have a feeling that they could have been discriminated against. The only way you can eliminate that is to stop having multicultural societies. Have an ethnically homogenous society, and this lady here, let's say that she was black, I'm not quite sure if it said she was black, it said that she was non-white, I think. If she was living within a society that contained all black people, then and she got turned down for a house, there is no possible way she could think that there was racial discrimination involved, because the societies would all be full of the same people like her. And it would be the same as if you were white, or if you were Chinese, you're trying to rent somewhere and you're renting it from somebody from a different ethnicity and they turn you down. There's always going to be that suspicion that they turned you down because they wanted their own ethnicity to rent the place. And there's nothing wrong with wanting your own ethnicity and wanting to help out your own ethnicity. It's only people that are of European extraction that seem to think that it's wrong to help out their extended family, and we're being told that we should be helping out these other extended families instead. Newsbeat spoke to some renters who agreed that it was a familiar problem. Paris Williams, 24, from York, has been searching for a new flat in London for over a year. "I just want to have somewhere to sleep," she said, "but I can't. It's a human right, and I think it's made harder by racism." Well, that's the first I heard that it was a human right to have somewhere to sleep. I thought human rights were about the right to a family, which basically, I guess, homosexuals then use to say that they have a right to adopt. But I don't think there's a right to have somewhere to sleep. I mean, it would be good if that was a human right, if you could say to the government, well, look, you have to provide me with a house. I mean, there used to be enough houses, there used to be enough council houses for people within Britain, but now we have lists and it can take up to 10 years for you to get a house. And the reason for that is because of the government's lax immigration policy, where they have allowed people from all over the world to come into the country because they think it will boost the economy. But what it really does is it means that there are problems with finding places to rent. And when these newcomers get turned down for a place to rent, they then assume that it's racism. They don't want to admit that it may have been something that they did. They just want to assume that it's racism. Paris Williams here, she says landlords have asked her questions that she feels they may not ask with white tenants. She says it's common speaking to landlords to say, oh, we've had issues with black people. So is she saying that they didn't have any issues with black people, that they are lying here? I mean, if they say something like that, maybe they're saying that because they are recognising a pattern. Because each time they rent the place out to somebody who is black, something happens that is against the tenants' agreements. I mean, she even makes a suggestion of what that might be. She says, I've even had landlords say to me, do you smoke weed? And I'm like, no. And the landlord will say, well, every black tenant I've had smokes weed, so you must smoke weed. So what we have there is pattern recognition. I mean, the landlord is saying, look, there's a bit of an issue here. Each time I rent the place out to somebody black, they're smoking within the flat. And it's against the agreement to smoke within the flat. So I'm concerned about this. I mean, what he's pointing out there is pattern recognition. He's not saying, I don't like the colour of your skin. He is saying people of your ethnicity tend to smoke weed. Do you smoke weed? And if he said, well, I don't believe this, then maybe she was smelling of weed when she was there. I mean, you would be a bit foolish to ignore patterns of behaviour, wouldn't you? And that's really what these accusations of racism are hoping to do. They're hoping to make people not recognise certain patterns of behaviour. And that's not to say that, say, everybody who is black smokes weed. And I doubt very much whether the landlord would have actually said something like that. This person here may have felt that. But if the landlord has observed this happening, and each time he rents the flat to somebody of a particular ethnicity, they end up smoking within the flat, he would be extremely foolish to rent out that flat again to somebody of that ethnicity, surely. And of course, if he then decides he's not going to rent the flat out to people of that ethnicity, he's going to get accused of racism, when the fact of the matter is, what he's guilty of is recognising a pattern and not wanting to repeat the same mistakes. Paris Williams continues. She says, they will start asking me, are you sure you're a British citizen? It's that constant scrutiny that makes you think, is it my race? And they actually answer this later on in the article. One of the charities that they talk to say that it's the landlords have to ascertain whether the person they are renting it to, what their immigration status is, whether they're an illegal immigrant. It's the landlord that gets into trouble for that if they're renting it out to an illegal immigrant. So it's actually a legal thing that the landlord has to ask this and ask whether you are a British citizen. I think it's even on the tenancy agreements that you have to say whether you are a British citizen or not. It's a question that landlords have to ask. And yet what they're implying here is that it's just out of the hatred of the colour of the skin that they're asking people if they're a British citizen. And even if you're of European ethnicity, you're still going to get asked if you're a British citizen, because it is a requirement for the landlords to do that. And she's saying here, is it my race? Well, no, it's the fact that you could be an illegal immigrant, regardless of what race you are. We have people coming over here from Albania, and Albania is part of Europe, isn't it? And yet they are illegal immigrants when they come here from Albania. Misty, a South Asian student in York, says she felt disheartened after one particular flat viewing, and she saw the flat with a potential housemate who was white. Misty says the landlord wouldn't make eye contact with her and addressed the other tenant instead. Now, again, is that going to be because he hates the colour of the skin? Or is that going to be because he instinctively recognises somebody from his own people group, from his own extended family, and therefore it is more natural to him to address his questions to them, because he's going to understand them a little bit easier. He's going to understand the body language a little bit easier than he is going to understand the body language of somebody from a completely different ethnic group. And obviously, you're going to feel more at ease when you're talking to your own ethnic group, when you're among your own ethnic group, than with somebody from a different ethnic group. And to find the proof of that, all we have to do is look at all these calls that black and minority ethnic activists make to see more of their own people represented on television and to see more of their own people represented in the schools. And they say how good it is and how it makes them feel much, much better and much more at ease when the person who is offering the job is of their same ethnic group. And this cuts both ways, doesn't it? It's obviously easier if you're of European extraction to talk to Europeans. And it may be happening at an unconscious level, at a subconscious level, because a lot of people, they try to say, oh, no, I don't discriminate or anything like that. But naturally, they are going to feel more at home amongst their own people group. The same as you feel more at home, more natural, more relaxed when you're among your own family. And it really is the same thing when we're looking at race and ethnicity. You're just talking about the extended family. So this landlord wouldn't make eye contact with her. And instead of seeing that as him recognising somebody from his extended family at a subconscious level, she sees it as, oh no, he's discriminating against me. Not that he is responding to the fact that he is seeing himself, an aspect of himself there in front of him that he is talking to, somebody from his own family, and therefore he feels easier talking to them rather than talking to her. Ari, a 23-year-old black woman in London, had a similar experience when viewing a flat with her white partner. When Ari told the landlord that her partner would not be living with her, she says the landlord looked almost disappointed. She was really selling the flat to my partner. It was very much like she had a specific idea of who she wanted to rent that flat to. Well, is there anything wrong with that? Is there anything wrong with having a specific idea of the person that you want to rent the flat to? And it could have been any reason other than race that she was really selling the flat to her partner. It could be that it was her partner that had the higher wage. Could be that it was a partner that had more savings. Could be that it was the partner that was wearing more expensive clothes. Could be that it was the partner that wasn't a smoker. I mean, it could be all sorts of different reasons other than race. But if you happen to be of a non-white race and you get turned down for something, there is always going to be that suspicion that it was racism, regardless of what's done about it. And it's not neither right nor wrong. It's just something that is always going to happen. And the only way to stop that is to stop multiculturalism. I mean, it's so simple. Stopping multiculturalism would stop all these problems that we have that are associated with race and racism. And yet nobody points it out, whereas it's such a simple solution that would solve everybody's problems. It would solve white people's problems of feeling guilty all the time and being accused of microaggressions and all the rest of it. And it would solve black people and non-white people's problems of having a suspicion that they were being discriminated against all the time. Because that suspicion just would not exist if they were just amongst their own people. Ari decided not to offer on the flat, while Misty, who made an offer, was told that it had already been taken. With no accommodation for the year ahead, Misty was left to defer her university place by a year. And of course, Misty is saying, well, this has got to be racism, why I wasn't given this flat. But it wasn't that, it was just that there was somebody else who was more suitable. And they got given the flat. It had already been taken. That was what she was told. Clearly, these people assumed that it was racism. They must have made a complaint about this because they're going to the BBC about it. But their complaint was not upheld when these organisations investigated it. They found that it wasn't discrimination that was involved. Charities say a lack of regulation in the private rented sector has left the door open for racial discrimination. The Race Equality Foundation says that budget cuts have emaciated services responsible for tackling discrimination, such as local authorities and the Equality and Human Rights Commission. Its CEO, Jabir Butt, OBE, added that right to rent legislation, which means landlords need to check a tenant's immigration status, has created an environment where landlords have much more power about who they choose to rent to. I can't help but think that discrimination will be part and parcel of that, Jabir says. Interesting, Jabir Butt has these letters after his name, Order of the British Empire. I mean, that really says that Britain is a non-racist society, isn't it, if it gives out honours to people with names like Jabir Butt. And he says here that landlords have to ask about the immigration status, and that is regardless of what race or ethnicity the prospective tenant is. Landlords have to ask that question. And yet, as we can see here, people that are non-white that are trying to rent, they take it that if they're asked that question, then the landlord is being racist. And again, these are the most egregious examples of racism amongst landlords that the BBC were able to find. And it seems to me that there isn't any racism there. It's just pattern recognition, or it's people assuming that it must be racism because they didn't get the house. And this is the real problem that we have with all of this. Anytime somebody non-white doesn't get something that they wanted, they have the suspicion that the reason for that is racism. And they're encouraged to believe that. They're encouraged to believe that by our media. Yet Britain is one of the most non-racist countries in the world. If we weren't, then we wouldn't be bending over backwards to try and help people in the way that we are. We wouldn't be bringing in all these laws, these equality laws and all these diversity quotas, and trying to make it so that companies and people are forced to ignore pattern recognition and forced to employ people that they may not want to employ, or give houses to people that they may not want to give the house to. I mean, it's effectively done away completely with freedom of association, encouraging all of these programs that we have. And none of them are going to succeed in doing away with racism, because you will always have a suspicion that racism exists if you have a multicultural society. And if there is that suspicion there, then that means that whenever they do a poll, people are going to say, oh, yes, there is racism. Yes, there is racism because I got turned down for a house, or I got turned down for a job. And they are going to assume that it must be racism for this, when it could have an innocent explanation. I mean, even when the government did an investigation into this, they investigated institutional racism to see if there was such a thing. And they said, it doesn't exist. Yes, there is individual racism from people that are racist, that discriminate against people because of the colour of their skin. But at the institutional level, there are other reasons for these different outcomes in society. There are other reasons for it. It may be that you don't have good enough qualifications, or it may be that you have a criminal record. It could be all sorts of different things for the different outcome. And yet people just assume that it's racism. And it really doesn't help that the BBC encourage people to think that. Now, as I say, what's really going on here is discrimination against white people. And the next article that we have here is titled "Tory Candidates Given Lessons on White Resentment Before Standing for Parliament." And I saw that and I thought, what do they mean? What do they mean by white resentment? Is it white people resenting being brainwashed with all this anti-racism stuff? Is it white people resenting being replaced? Well, no, white resentment is apparently not being happy about being sent on diversity courses where they're told they should be doing everything to help other people groups instead of helping their own people group. Conservative candidates for Parliament are being given lessons on white resentment in diversity and inclusion training sessions. Would-be Tory MPs are told white resentment is a significant problem for ethnic minorities, and it is defined as when white employees suggest equality and diversity training is no longer required, as it provides ethnic minority employees with unfair advantages. So it's effectively when people say, well, I don't quite get this. Why should I be doing everything for this other people group instead of putting my own people group first? And why aren't they told to do everything for other people groups? Why aren't they told to do that instead of putting their own people group first? And clearly these other groups do put their people group first, and that is quite right, and they should be putting their people group first. The issue is with white people not putting our group first and coming out with all these ideas like this, that we have white resentment if we're not happy about that. I mean, that's where it comes from. If you look at the people that campaign for this and push for this, in the majority, you'll see that they are white women. And also, you have these feminised men that encourage it. Despite efforts by ministers to ban woke diversity courses for civil servants, similar workshops are being offered to Tory candidates via the party's online training platform. So it tells us there, apparently there are ministers who've been trying to stop this. Suella Braverman is one of them. But their own courses that the Conservative Party are giving out are implying that Suella Braverman has white resentment, because she doesn't think it's a good idea to have these courses. So they're accusing Suella Braverman of being a white supremacist, basically, the government's own courses. And Suella Braverman, of course, is of Indian ethnicity. Tory candidates are offered unconscious bias training, a practice the government has promised to phase out across Whitehall in 2020. So 2 years ago it said they were going to stop all this. The Conservative Party's training platform describes unconscious bias as being when you discriminate against one group or person without being aware of your actions. So it's an instinctual thing. So they're saying white people's instincts are biased. The lessons refer to microaggressions, such as asking a black colleague, why does your hair not look like ours? And are you able to sit out in the sun as long without any sun cream? So basically just curiosity. It's wrong to be curious. It's wrong to politely ask out of curiosity why somebody who is quite obviously biologically different to you, it's wrong to ask them about these differences. I mean, what is wrong with asking people about their hair? I mean, it's a bit of a silly question. Why does your hair not look like ours? I mean, the answer is because they are a different ethnicity. I can't see that anybody would be that daft as to ask them a question like that. But I think saying, are you able to sit out in the sun without sun cream? I mean, that's effectively just an innocent question, isn't it? It's like, does your darker skin protect you from the sun? It's an innocent question. But apparently that's unconscious bias to have curiosity about people. I mean, it's a similar thing to asking somebody who's maybe they're extremely fair of skin or an albino or albino and saying to them, you know, do you burn in the sun? I mean, nobody would think that was racist, would they? Do you burn in the sun? And I guess mainly because people know that people with white, with freckles, they're more likely to to burn in the sun. We understand that as white people because it's a type of white ethnicity, isn't it? White with freckles. But you're not going to know instinctively what it is like to have a high melanin content in your skin. You're not going to know whether black people can be out in the sun for longer or not. It's just an innocent question to ask, to say, do they need sun cream? Another example of unconscious bias cited is the mispronunciation of colleagues' names. So if you have difficulty pronouncing an African name, that is unconscious bias. One slide offers a case study. I prefer for you not to shorten my name. It means God's gift. And my parents named it to me for a very specific reason. I've actually done you a favour and I've already shortened it. It's Onyin Yiu Chukawu. Can you please call me Onyin Yi? Now, it's obviously a thing that most people do at work is they will shorten people's names because it's easier to say a shortened version of somebody's name. If somebody is called Jonathan, for instance, a lot of the time that will be shortened to John. And you also have nicknames that people like to give one another in the work environment. What they're saying here is, oh, no, that's racist. That's racism, that is. That's not shortening somebody's name to make it easier to say. That is an unconscious bias, and you should be forced to learn to pronounce African names, even if you aren't African, even if you're not living in Africa. You should just suddenly know how to pronounce these names. And if you look at the different languages around the world, particularly Africa, if you look at the language of the Bushmen, I mean, they have a lot of clicks and whistling noises, and it would be very difficult to imitate those sounds. I mean, it's difficult for white people even to imitate the sounds that are made in Russian. I mean, even within our own people group, the wider people group within the race, there are white ethnicities that have languages that are very difficult for us to pronounce. We could even get names wrong. But what they're saying here is if you get a black person's name wrong and you mispronounce it, that's racism. That's unconscious bias. Candidates are also given a list of terminologies and their definitions to study, including gender fluid, non-binary, affirmed gender, pangender, and polygender. And they even give them an exam at the end of this. You can pass a test. You have to revise all of this and answer questions at the end of it. Ed Barker, a member of the party's candidates list and the chief executive of Conservative Way Forward, said, "I don't want the state or the party I love breathing down my neck and telling me how to think. I hope this can be stopped immediately. Otherwise, we will have a whole new generation of Conservative candidates who think that this is normal." It's not just the Conservative candidates that think it's normal. It's a lot of the new younger generation think it's normal because this is what's going on in the schools under the Conservatives' watch. Before Christmas, we published a report which found that £7 billion worth of taxpayers' money is being wasted on politically motivated campaigns that are dividing us and making us all poorer, including millions on unconscious bias training. It would be devastating if CCHQ was wasting party members' money on divisive and contentious schemes like these. And there is a lot of money that's being spent on this, and these diversity and inclusion officers, they earn an absolute fortune if you look at the amount they're being given in the NHS. And essentially, what does a diversity and inclusion officer do? Well, they try to increase the diversity. So they effectively try to get more black and minority ethnic people employed by the company. So they're effectively advocating for black and minority ethnics. Do we have anybody advocating for white people of European ethnicity? No, we don't, because of course that gets accused of being a racist. On Sunday, Suella Braverman ordered a review into politically correct nonsense, as she called it, in the Home Office, after an internal note told staff to not use words such as homosexual or mate for fear of causing offence. So don't use the scientifically accurate word homosexual. You have to use some politically correct terminology instead. A Home Office source told The Telegraph, following the revelations, "The Home Secretary has made her views very clear. She does not want to see this kind of politically correct nonsense in the department." So she quite clearly has this white resentment, doesn't she, that these prospective Tories are being taught about. Meanwhile, Conservative candidates are provided with a series of online lessons on everything from emotional intelligence, self-responsibility, social media best practice, being resilient and building a team. And of course, they're all good things to learn about. Under the diversity inclusion section, There are courses on race, gender reassignment, sex discrimination, and sexual orientation. And aspiring MPs are given videos to watch and slides to read, and they are then quizzed at the end on what they have learned. One question asks if the following statement is true or false. Your organisation can recruit from a wider talent pool and gain a broader perspective by promoting a diverse and inclusive workplace. Of course, the answer required is true. Is that going to improve the workplace, though? Having a broader perspective, is that going to improve the workplace? Better qualifications is what is going to improve the workplace, not just employing people because of what ethnicity they are or what sexuality they are. Another question asks candidates to fill in the blanks in the following statement. As well as experiencing racial discrimination, two blanks is also a significant problem for black and minority ethnic employees. And of course, the correct answer being white resentment, something which we're basically saying that Suella Braverman has. And they're also using this term black and minority ethnic. Didn't the Conservative government say that we should not be using this term? We should be using specific ethnicities for people rather than just lumping them all in together as black and minority ethnic. You know, this course in itself has got microaggressions in it, hasn't it? When asked how to respond to a colleague pointing out your unconscious bias, the quiz states that you should react positively and thank the person. So you should thank the person for calling you a racist. In a section on racial discrimination, it is stated that a requirement to conform to white British cultural practices, such as anglicising names in the workplace, is part of a system of domination and oppression. So it's domination and oppression. If you can't actually say the name of somebody from a different ethnicity and you shorten it or you give them a British name instead. What about people that choose to tell you a British name because they understand that it's difficult to pronounce their name? You often get that happening with Chinese people, for instance. They will give you an easier name to use, and it's just out of politeness, isn't it? But they're being told here that it's not politeness, it's a system of domination and oppression. Under a course on gender reassignment, candidates are urged to use gender-neutral language, such as they and their, and the use of gender-neutral bathrooms are encouraged in workplaces. And there was, I think there was a rape that took place in a gender-neutral bathroom the other week in Cardiff. I think the rape may have been carried out by an asylum seeker as well. I may be wrong in that, but I do know that obviously gender-neutral bathrooms are making it easier for rapes to occur, aren't they? In a course on religion and belief, it is recommended that organisations follow good practice procedures to ensure everyone is treated equally. And it tells us about some of these practices. It says these practices include ensuring employees are not discriminated against if their religion requires them to behave with modesty. With immodest behaviour, including shaking hands with a member of the opposite sex, undergoing a security search, even when conducted by a member of the same sex, and being alone with a member of the opposite sex. So they're saying we should not get offended if somebody non-white refuses to shake your hand. And what would they say if somebody white refused to shake hands with somebody non-white? They would accuse them of racism, wouldn't they? But it's not racism when somebody non-white refuses to shake hands with someone white. And it's, and what they're saying here is somebody non-white, perhaps from a different religion, should not be forced to undergo a security search because they might see that as immodest. I mean, are they saying that white people or Christian people, they don't have the same standards of modesty, and it's perfectly fine to strip search somebody white or Christian, but we can't do that to somebody non-white or Muslim, for instance, because they might find it an insult to their modesty? I mean, what we're saying here is saying that we need to treat people as if they are higher up in society than ourselves. You know, all equality under the law, that's all been done away with. And what this does is it elevates certain people within our society to higher positions. And this, again, this is the problem that you have with multiculturalism. You cannot get around trying to do these things, because what you're effectively trying to do is you're trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. And it's not possible. And you'll end up using all your resources to try and make it possible, believing that just around the corner there's a utopia when the real utopia is just to have ethnically homogenous societies. Racism could not exist within an ethnically homogenous society. Anyway, I've gone a little bit over time here, so thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless, and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.